Man, Lee Hale is out there these days. You know Lee. Used to be a religion reporter in our newsroom, covered the LDS church. Still does, really. He's a good reporter, really good. And Lee is Mormon. But like most religion reporters, he kept his faith to himself until last summer, when he was thinking about the story from back when he was a missionary.
I served in the Minnesota Minneapolis mission. This was 10 years ago. And there's the thing about missions, for those unfamiliar and for those familiar, it's good to refresh. The structure of a mission is so important. Like, their missionaries have different positions of power, right? There's the district leader and then the zone leader above them and then the assistant to the president above them. Yeah. There's only two in the whole mission.
Those are the big deals.
The big deals. They have basically, they're talking to the mission president, you know, the senior figure in charge. They know what's going on. They've got all the info.
Yeah.
And they're really cute about what they won't tell you. And I'm bringing this up because it mattered to me more than I would like to admit. I think some missionaries go out there and they're like, I just want to help people.
Yeah.
I love those people. But I was like, I wanted to do that, but also I was really worried all the time and concerned about, am I good enough for this kind of leadership, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason that's important is because early on in my mission, I was in an area, this is actually in Wisconsin. We had a little bit of Wisconsin in our mission. And we have the list of everyone that should be in the congregation in the ward. And there's a lot of them that don't show up on Sunday, right? And you go and visit them and you try to encourage them, come back.
Yeah.
And one of the names we found out was a guy who had been home from his mission less than a year. And he was an assistant to the president. Mind blowing.
That this former AP, and not so long ago, was not going to church.
Was not coming to church, right? And I was just like, well, this is, I don't know what happened, but surely we got to help this guy out.
Yeah.
It was unthinkable. I was judging, of course.
Yeah.
And so he was at the college campus nearby, and we couldn't find him. I mean, obviously he knows how, like, these things work, and he was very good at not returning our phone calls. And I think my companion, you know, the guy I was assigned with at the time, I think he was less interested in this journey than I was. But I was like, we got to talk to this guy. And we just couldn't find him. And it was frustrating to me. I felt like we've got to somehow get the message across to this guy that he needs to come back. And we were doing laundry at a member's house, member of the congregation in the ward. And this like wise man who was really patient with us and would like let us do laundry at his house, would just kind of listen to us kind of, you know, fret about what was going on. And I remember just complaining to this guy, Brother Smith, that this former missionary, this guy, this college student. And I just thought, like, what is going on? What could possibly be the reason? And Brother Smith just kind of says, it sounds like he needs a break. I remember thinking, like, you don't get a break. Like, that's not how this works. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, you can't take a break. You're all in or you're all out. And if you're all out, that's a problem. But bugged me. I respect this guy, but that bugged me. Fast forward to last summer in particular, I was having a hard time. Being at church was hard for me. It was very hard. I didn't like going and hating my experience. And it wasn't that I thought people around me were terrible. It wasn't that I thought. It was just an internal struggle.
Yeah.
And Brother Smith's voice came back into my head. Maybe you need a break. I can't describe how graceful and thoughtful and kind that response felt at that moment in my life.
Completely opposite reaction to the one you had originally had.
Yeah, because growing up in a community where you feel like there are two options.
Yeah.
And you realize, like, hey, I can be kind to myself and give myself a little wiggle room. I mean, that has saved me on a spiritual level.
This is Radio Westenberg for Fabrizio. That moment, and really years and years of thinking about the way different people believe, led to this new podcast Lee hosts. It's called Preach. It's about two things, Lee's own spiritual journey, but also the journey of others. So he talks to believers who are in what he calls the messy middle of faith, people who haven't totally bought into everything in their religion, but who still cared deeply about their faith identity. So it was comforting to hear this member, Brother Smith, say to you, it just needed a break, you know? It's not that big of a deal. Sometimes people just need a break. At what point did it morph from that being comforting for you personally to this bigger professional inquiry? Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. We talk about, I'm preacher, talk about people in the messy middle of faith.
Yeah.
The thing that shouldn't exist is the messy middle, right? If you're using that kind of like black and white thinking. And the thing I love about that is that's basically all of us. Mm-hmm. And when you do have such a polarizing view of what spirituality should be, then people start pretending. Or they leave and they're so out of that community now, they kind of make that, you know, point to try to tear it down, to burn it down. And I say that preach is for doubters who don't want to burn it all down. And I just found those people were the best interviews because they don't have an agenda. They're not the clergy or the very faithful apologist trying to prove a point. They're not the person who is, you know, hell-bent on proving this organization wrong. They're the people who are just like, I don't know if this is right for everyone. This is my walk. This is my experience. And ironically, it's usually much closer to everyone's experience.
Do you think it's on some level that you're looking to make a case for yourself to stay?
I want to own my identity in a way that isn't about staying or leaving.
Huh.
I want my Mormonism to be bigger than a church. And it feels that way now. And that's very freeing. And I feel like a lot of people feel that way about their faiths. Once you have the belief or that you internalize that your spiritual identity is yours, it's between you and your maker or whoever you imagine, then nobody can take anything from you. And I think so much of my life in Mormonism was out of devotion and love, but also out of fear. Fear of somebody taking away something dear to me, of my position, of my, you know, like going back to the missionary life, the leadership callings that I wanted. I didn't want to be seen as inadequate because I wouldn't climb the ladder. Hmm. And once I stopped caring about the ladder, I thought, wow, this is cool because it's mine. And I get to decide where I take that.
Do you realize how taboo it is for us to be talking about this in these terms? Not as religious people, but as journalists.
Yeah.
Like the fact that you are revealing these things as someone who covers faith, covers religion.
I know.
That's weird, right?
Yeah. I have some thoughts about this. my first thought I got to point out, I've always covered religion. I've covered education. That's been my two beats.
Yep.
And when I cover education stories, I tell people pretty early and often,
I was a teacher. Yep.
I taught. And that always adds to the credibility of my reporting. Hmm. I never felt anyone tell that was inappropriate.
Yeah.
Faith makes people funky and weird. And so it's been different. I would say that in the work I do now, I want to be objective. And I think the best way to be objective is to show people where I'm coming from. I'm going to ask questions a certain way. I'm going to interpret what I hear a certain way. And if you don't like the way I'm doing it, that's fine. I want you to know where I'm coming from to make that judgment yourself. Because I am biased. Yeah. I bring my own experiences. I try to be as fair and as thoughtful to whoever I'm talking to. But with this podcast, I thought, you know, rather than dance around this like endlessly, because it would literally be an endless dance of trying to protect like, well, I don't know, where's Lee coming from? And the simple rule of thumb is I don't want to ask a question I wouldn't be willing to answer myself on the show.
It's so interesting. Like in every episode so far of the podcast, some version of this question has come up or some response. Oh, we did that too as Mormons.
Yeah.
Oh, I understand that because as a Mormon, blah, 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 right? So everything is being filtered through not just you personally, but specifically as a Mormon. That's interesting.
Can I use an example?
Yeah.
So I was interviewing Glenn Washington, who's the host of the public radio show Snap Judgment.
Well, man, talk about messy. My beliefs don't make any sense to me. And I've worked on this. I've really worked.
He was raised in what he would call a Christian cult in rural Michigan. I say what he would call because I think some people might bristle at that. But he said it's a white supremacist Christian cult. And I was a black member of it. And it was very problematic in that way.
That's amazing, actually. But
right.
Keep going. Yeah.
But I said, what would a young Glenn tell me is the purpose of life?
We were here on earth to be gods. We are here on earth to keep the God family alive.
To be gods?
Yes.
it like took the breath out of me because I thought, like, literally, I thought Mormons were the only ones who believed that. And the interview changed.
I remember we had our youth camp. And at one point, our exercise was to describe the land that we would build, the land that we would create.
Wow.
And, you know, I had this grand tower that went several miles into the sky, and it went down through the ocean, and you could see the various creatures on every single level through this great glass elevator type of structure. And it was stunning and crazy and ridiculous. And my then best friend in the group, he said, well, he just wanted a farm, just a little piece of land with a little, some sheep. And I was like, man, are you crazy?
I've literally thought about this. You know, I thought about what the worlds I create would look like.
Wait, do you think it changed just for you, or do you think it changed for him? Like, oh, we relate in this way. And do you think that just gave you an advantage as an interviewer to get him to be more, drop the defenses? Because people are often defensive about faith. I'm guessing this is going to be an ongoing issue for you in the podcast, like that people don't often want to talk about this stuff. But do you think that the interview changed, again, for him too?
I would say for both. It'd be interesting for me to ask him that question now, because my perception was it affected both of us, that we became even less filtered with each other. And that is, when people are careful about this, I don't think it's, I think they're doing that often to protect themselves for very good reasons.
Sure.
They've had experiences where they've opened their heart to somebody and it hasn't gone well. I want this to be safe for my guests. And I also want them to be game to answer some tough questions. And so it just feels like there's usually a moment in every interview where we switch from question and answer to sharing, like actually sharing our experience. Mm. And if we don't get there, I think, what a waste, because that's not what it's about.
What is it that bothers you about the way you hear religious reporting? Because I know this is one of the things that's bugged you, like the way people report on faith or talk about faith.
Well, I usually say it that way, which is I don't like this about religious coverage. But it's also I don't like what I want from religion news even. Hmm. Like, I want to know about controversies.
Yeah.
Like, it's fascinating. It's heartbreaking. It's, you know, it's terrible. But also I want to know. And the things that are news are usually things that are problematic, are institutions failing their members. And we need to cover those things. So it wasn't so much like, hey, I think we should stop doing this story. I just thought, like, can we balance it out a little bit?
Hmm.
Like, if we're going to hear so much about the pain and tragedy of faith and the occasional story that's not that.
And the people who leave. You're interested in the people who are trying to make a go at staying.
Trying to make a go at staying, or at least trying to own their spiritual identity in a way that's new for them, or, you know.
Because I should point out, not everyone did stay. Glenn Washington did not obviously stay. And today, he refers to himself or thinks of himself not as an atheist, but as an agnostic, although he doesn't go to church, a church.
No. At one point in the interview, he says, he's talking about the divinity he sees in his children.
Yeah.
He says, does that make me religious?
When I say that there is a purpose for my children, for me, for the world, that there's a judgment that happens, or there's karma in the world, am I telling them that that's a religion? Those are religious concepts that I'm telling my kids, and I am not a religious person, but I still believe those things. I believe they're here for something. I believe that I see the spark of the divine in them. No question about it.
I love that. Like, I love that. If you're willing to say, I don't know if I'm religious or not, then, like, that is the kind of person I want on Preach.
That was a moment you're getting at, right? That's the kind of answer you want. Is those moments when they're like, like they don't have it settled necessarily. I liked that.
And I like
moment,
that.
Actually.
I like what it says about the relationship we've created in that interview.
Yeah.
Which means they know what I'm expecting of them, and I don't need them to give me a clear cut answer. So many people expect a clear cut answer. It's just easier that way.
Yeah.
Especially in Salt Lake City, it's like, are you in or are you out? You know, but people want to know. And I just like complicating that for people. I can't give them an easy answer.
I have to say, when I've talk to people in the street about who they've asked me about Preach, a lot of times it's been, when is that Mormon podcast starting? What's the deal with a Mormon podcast? Yep. Does that bother you? Because it's not a Mormon podcast.
It's not a Mormon podcast.
I mean, it comes through the filter of a Mormon reporter, but it's not a Mormon podcast. We need to underline this.
It's not. It's not. And my editor, Joel, will be very grateful you're pointing that out. Because, yeah, this is from the beginning, we've said, how can we get this across? It's not a Mormon podcast. It doesn't offend me because that's usually a Mormon asking that question. And if they think it's a podcast for them, they're right. But, you know, if someone listens to our interview with Batsheva Marcus, Orthodox Jewish sex therapist, and they think it's a Jewish podcast, and I'd say, cool. Like this should feel like you have investment in each of these stories. And so, yeah, there is going to be a Mormon tint, but especially in, like you said, those the kind of the Venn diagram of where our faiths collide, I think that's a really important thing. So I'm not offended if they say that as long as they keep listening.
Let's talk about Rainn Wilson. This is episode one. Rainn Wilson, of course, the actor, played Dwight Schrute in The Office.
Right.
He's Baha'i.
Yeah.
And you say in the podcast, in a conversation, well, I think you say in the podcast that you've been fascinated with the Baha'i faith for a long time. Why?
It's basically the same age as Mormonism.
Yeah.
Baha'u'llah, their prophet, was alive at the same time as Joseph Smith.
Wow.
So that alone is like, isn't that fascinating?
Yeah,
it is. Two of these prophets alive at the same time. But also they built temples. So a lot of it was just kind of like, this feels familiar to me. But Baha'u'llah was very open about, I'm drawing from all these faiths, that God is in every faith, which depending on the Mormon prophet, Mormons have said that too. And I just thought, like, is that even work? Like, kind of like, for me, it almost seems like too good to be true. Like, they won't obviously match up here and there. And so it's like, this seems tricky to live. So in that way, I thought, like, well, I love the aspiration. And I just kind of think, like, that can't really be a thing, right? Rainn Wilson, to his credit, he's very Baha'i in the way that he does draw on lots of spiritual teachings.
Yeah.
You could tell in his faith journey that he was reading this and reading that and just taking it to heart. And in a way that kind of makes me a little envious because that's not quite been my spiritual path.
Well, I want to ask you about that actually.
Yeah.
But before, I want to make sure listeners understand. So Rainn, he's raised Baha'i. He grows up Baha'i, but then he leaves for a long time.
I didn't want any moral laws over my head. I wanted to do what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. I had a girlfriend at the time and we were having sex, but premarital sex is frowned upon greatly.
They have similar lifestyle standards, guidelines, like a lot of religions do.
Yeah, no premarital sex,
yeah.
No drinking.
Right.
I felt like a hypocrite if I was going to Baha'i activities and I was breaking this law. So that was another existential crisis. I was also surrounded by a lot of secular non-believers who just thought religion was preposterous. And I was very highly influenced by the people around me. So all of those things together, I was just like, you know what? Screw it. I'm done.
It seems like, you know, he did have a season of his life where that was fine. And then he just felt a little hollow.
I was chronically dissatisfied with my life. It's the kind of dissatisfaction where you wake up at 4 in the morning and you're like, why am I even here? What's going on? What does it all mean?
This was before The Office. And, you know, I think there's something about being an actor trying to make it in New York City.
That makes you wonder about your life.
It makes you wonder about your life. It can feel awfully lonely when you're trying to, I think, sell yourself.
Yeah.
And people not always wanting what you're selling.
Yeah.
And so when he felt that hollow feeling, he's like, I gotta revisit this.
The thing is, he doesn't come running right back to Baha'i. He looks at other faiths. He goes to different churches. I mean, he really did what seemed like this kind of extensive research.
I started reading holy books such as the Bible and the Quran and the Bhagavad Gita and the writings of the Buddha. And I went to church and I went to some Buddhist gatherings and went to different Quaker prayer meeting. And I just was really exploring what was out there.
That's the most Baha'i thing in the world.
Is it?
Right?
Yeah.
Because it seems like that's
so how, that's the remnant of the Baha'i before him. Like, seek it out.
Right. And Baha'u'llah, basically his message was like, I'm the new prophet, but these are all old prophets and they come from different faiths. And also I think he took his time because his partner was not Baha'i.
Yeah.
And I think this happens with relationships sometimes, which I think it's hilarious, which is you kind of have to hide it a little bit because you don't want to think that you're being like radicalized or anything. And also it's like, I don't think you want to put the cart before the horse. He didn't know where it was going to end.
Right.
And you have to be patient with yourself in that situation.
To his credit, right?
To his credit.
He was patient.
And he said it felt like walking into the ocean.
You can either like dive in Or you do like me and kind of like sidle yourself in and the waves splash up against you. And then finally they're up to your nipples and then you go, okay, here I go. And then you're in. It was more like that. It was a longer, slower process of several years.
That's how he likes to swim. And that's how he likes to, I guess, you know, find his faith, which is like, give yourself some time.
He says this thing that kind of surprised me a little bit. I mean, it's something that I think the atheists listening or the more secular people are going to be really bugged by this.
A life experience is very, very different if there's a creator and if there's not a creator. If there's a creator, then there's a purpose. And who we are is not just our bodies, but we continue on in some way after this physical plane. And if there's not, then live a great 70 to 90 years on this planet. Have as much pleasure and meaning and fulfillment as you possibly can, and then die, and that's it.
Now, I don't think he meant it in a way that people who don't believe in a creator believe that there's no reason for being loving and compassionate without there being a God. But he does, but he did go out and say it, that he lives his life knowing that there's a creator. It makes a difference for him. And I don't know, I was a little surprised by that.
Yeah. And if I wasn't as nervous as I was during the interview, I might have pushed back a little bit. Not in the sense I disagree, but like that's not true for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And a lot of people make the case that if you're just motivated to do good based on what you get after this life, that's a very, very shallow motivation. And I actually tend to agree with that. I had a very, I mean, kind of a polar opposite in a way experience interviewing a man named Simranjeet Singh, who is Sikh. Sometimes referred to as Sikhism. Mm-hmm. And they don't have a teaching about the afterlife. And it was blowing my mind that, like, how could you have a faith tradition that doesn't tell you what happens after you die? And he's like, you just do.
But how do you, what does he mean, how do you just do? That is the thing that has driven human evolution, is this, the idea that we became conscious because we were afraid of death and had to create some sort of explanation for why it is that we will not exist at some point.
Right. And I think this is definitely an East meets West situation here.
That's true. And, I'm sounding very Western.
Right. And me too. Yeah. Me too. Yeah. And I literally, I mean, Mormonism, like, they have all the answers. Like you go to the the church's website and it's like, they'll answer all the questions you have. But the funny thing is I've always had the answers and I still don't know. And Simran is just somebody who's never been given the answers and he still doesn't know. And so if we ended up in the same place, then what does it matter how we got there? And so I actually find a lot of beauty in these faith traditions who are willing to let people wonder, and they're not intimidated by wonder.
They're content with the mystery.
Yeah.
There's this, the idea that of rain going out and searching and searching and searching. What do you make of that? Because one of the things you've talked about is that studying faith could actually be problematic. I mean, one of the things you say early on in the podcast is if you are a religious person, do not cover your own religion.
Yeah.
Like there's a risk there. Explain what you mean.
Well, and I mean something very specific by that, which is if you're a religion journalist and you're covering your own church, you will get a very intense and detailed view into what it takes to run an institution.
Yeah, see the sausage made.
Yeah, and I don't feel the same way about studying theology. I think theology can be extremely inspiring. I mean, there's just like it's like the tale as old as time is that, you know, you have a beautiful theology and then men turn it into a structure, a bureaucracy, basically, and then things stop, you know, matching up. But for me, it was just very institutionally, I thought, like, well, I don't feel the same commitment to this organization that I used to. And when I say that, I think that could have happened if I was Catholic. Mm-hmm. I think that could have happened if I was Jehovah's Witness. I think it could have happened at many, many different faiths. Those are the ones that are very institutional, so the easiest examples. So I don't think that the issues in Mormonism that I saw are unique, but they felt real to me, and it didn't make me reassess things.
I wanted to ask you about this moment we were talking about before with Glenn Washington, where he says that thing about this is the moment when you could sort of the magic moment you've talked about in the interview, where all of a sudden you can relate to him because as a member of this cult. He believed, you know, he wanted to be a god.
Yep.
It was this nice moment when you're talking about how, oh, yeah, here's how I would, you know, create my world. But I think what was interesting about that is the idea of how much you keep and what you discard.
Yeah.
And what do you think about that? Because it seems like for Glenn Washington, he's so far away from that experience of the cult. But he still comes back to this basic stuff. Like, I remember talking to a writer once who used to be Mormon, and she told me that the image that she has of God is still the Mormon God. She hasn't been Mormon for a long time, or not conventionally Mormon for a long time. But it's like, I think she described it as her architecture for the universe was the structure that she learned in Mormonism. And she sort of has kept that because it just helped her understand it. It seems like Washington's going through the same thing.
Yeah, I think it kind of even surprises him. You can kind of feel that in, you know, in his answers. It's like, oh, I guess there's more of this than I realized, you know. Because, I mean, I can't speak for every faith, but I think for most faiths, there's a lot of beautiful things that you grew up with. I mean, to believe that there is a creator who loves you and wants to take care of you, wants to look after you, that's pretty profound.
Yeah.
Then that comes with the weight of, you know, for instance, if you're gay and you believe that your creator doesn't want you to be gay, then that would be extremely painful and cause dissonance from the beginning. And if you're Glenn Washington, you're black, and they talk about the virtue of whiteness, then that causes a lot of issues with it. And so it's a mixed bag. And I think it's just, I think once the dust settles, you know, once somebody reassesses their faith and they look back, I think that's the time to think, I didn't hate all of it. And if you don't treat your faith like a rental car that you have to give back once you're done with it, but that it's inside you, you can do that. And I'll speak for myself. I had a very pleasant upbringing. It's much easier for me to do that than for a lot of people. And so I understand that people can have a lot of PTSD with their faith tradition. I don't have that. And so for me, it is just a matter of, I'll keep this and I'll let that go.
I like the question you asked Glenn, I think finally, or one of the last questions you asked him. You said, you told him he sounded like a secular preacher.
It's funny you use that term.
Does it feel like that?
Because I thought at the end of it, the only thing I could do would be to become a cult leader. That's the only thing I have any sort of real background and knowledge of. But I didn't want to lead anybody's cult. I don't. And I think that the biggest thing missing right now in the world is empathy, is getting inside someone else's shoes and understanding their experience. And I really do believe that it is extremely hard to hate someone once you know their story.
What I meant in bringing that up was, that's another thing that you might think you can only do within the world of religion that you can actually do outside of religion too, is you can tell powerful stories. You can move people. And that's why his doctrine is empathy. His doctrine is stories. And to me, I think, like, hey, you're not that far off from what you set out to do. If you wanted to help people connect to something powerful, if you wanted to move them, you know, congrats. And I also just think it's funny because it's like you listen to these old recordings of Herbert W. Armstrong, who led his church. It's kind of like, that guy was kind of a radio performer.
Yeah.
And so now you are too. It's just funny.
There's this issue that you get at with Batsheva Marcus, the feminist Orthodox Jew.
Yeah.
This is the latest episode. And it's about how you use old texts, old scripture to find answers for modern questions. And I guess I wonder, does reading the actual text help, or does it hinder? Because it seems like a lot of people's faith doesn't actually come from the source material.
Yeah.
Like it's an impression of what they think is the source material. And when they actually go to the Bible or to the Book of Mormon or the Quran, they're either disappointed in the kind of lack of eloquence that's there or horrified by what's actually there. What do you think?
A lot of death, usually.
Yeah, a lot of death, a lot of mass murder and stuff.
The Book of Mormon starts out with somebody killing somebody on behalf of God. With Batsheva, I loved how she broke it down for me, that Jewish texts are laws and interpretations of those laws. And it goes on and on and on because people disagree and rabbis disagree.
And what happens is that
you come in with your own identity and you can approach it in a very different way. So when you're talking about sex, which is the one I tend to know about, you can say, well, I'm going to take these sources, which are much more sort of fundamentalist, or I can take these sources, which are equally legitimate, but much more progressive. And let's kind of figure out like what the right thing to do is. And two people or 10 people can come to different conclusions.
It's this ongoing debate.
Right. And for her, it was empowering because she thought, oh, I see how this happens. So we can still disagree. That's the thing that I think is so cool about at least the Orthodox Judaism that she practices, is to disagree is not this faith crisis. To disagree is necessary. And I think that's less so in traditional Mormonism, that disagreeing is not a good thing, right? Whereas I think that's the fun thing about scriptures, is you can read one scripture and interpret it different ways. I mean, in America, there was the slave Bible, which was given to slaves because it had all of the verses that basically validated slave ownership and took out all the ones that said otherwise. Mm-hmm. And that's just the way scriptures have always been, is you can take it and do a million things with it. For me, I actually love reading the Book of Mormon. I'm not going to say I read it every day, but I think there's really profound stories in there. For me, it comes back to 2 Nephi chapter 2. I think it's one of my favorite things I've ever read, and I think about it all the time, which is that basically Adam fell that men might be, and men are that they might have joy, and that you need opposition to understand beauty and goodness. And that is still my personal theology. Like, that is inside me. And when I reflect on that, I am inspired in a way that I don't feel inspired when I reflect on the institution that I grew up with.
What's interesting to you about Mormonism these days? And I wonder, are you interested in it in the same way you were when you began reporting on Mormonism? Or are the paradigms changing? I mean, not just the issues changing, but the way you're thinking about it.
It's not the same, to answer that question. I it's funny because, I mean, you've been a very good mentor to me at my time at KUER, and there were times where I think that you gave me space, but I was really optimistic about the kind of stories I could do, and that I could find a balance of like, well, you know, the reason you don't hear from general authorities a lot in stories is because you're not asking the right way and this and that. And I think that you knew a lot more than I did, obviously, and I learned that, you know, it's super hard to tell complicated stories that doesn't intimidate an institution. And that's what I wanted to tell eventually, was complicated stories. And I would like to have every voice included, and you don't always get that opportunity. And that's very frustrating. It's been very frustrating. It still is frustrating. So kind of out of necessity, you know, I've changed out the palace intrigue for people intrigue. I've realized there's so much richness in Mormon culture that is right for the picking. You don't necessarily need to make everything about this church people belong to. It's always going to be in the room. But I think that Mormons are so fascinating. Like, I think it's remarkable in the fact that faith influences everything in this state. People might bristle at that, and I do too at times. But also, it's like once you learn the cultural language, it is like a new language. And I still think it's fascinating that, you know, I went to Bear Lake with my family, and on Sunday there was almost no boats on the water. Yeah. And it's like, that's still a thing in 2019, that people are not on boats because it's the Lord's Day. Like, I still get delighted by that. And there is still this dedication and devotion that is so familiar to me that I find it beautiful and comforting and confusing sometimes. I like that stuff.
Do you think, how nervous does a conversation like the one we just had make your mom?
Oh, my mom.
Or dad.
To my parents' credit, they've been amazing. This is my personal read on a lot of people's experience with Mormonism, is that when they have a lot of issues reassessing their spiritual identity, it's mostly because of their family. Your family can put up obstacles in ways that other people cannot, in ways church leaders cannot. And I realized a while ago that I needed to start proactively having those conversations with my parents, or else it might kind of bubble up in a way that would not be fun. Partly it was like my dad would read my stories and want to talk about it and say, I don't know about this, I disagree. But they've been very supportive. And so, like, I've had the moments where I mean, I sat them down and I told them when I no longer had a temple recommend. And I don't, I'm really impressed with them because they never wanted to have that conversation with me, but they wanted to know the truth and they let me sit in that moment with them. So I think that they're, I think they'll listen and they'll love it. And that's, I'm extremely fortunate. I mean, without that, I don't think I could do this show without them. Like literally, like if I did not have a good relationship with my parents spiritually, it would be too much.
Lee Hale, he's the host of the podcast Preach. You can subscribe and download the first few episodes wherever you get your podcasts. Radio West is a production of KUER News, or thanks to our intern, Natu Twe. The show is produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. Christy Miners is our executive producer. I'm Doug Fabrizio.